This is the start of the November 11th, 1986 interview with Costa Boozer of Apalachicola, Florida. The interview concerns net making and making of other types of fishing gear. And this interview was done in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project. The interviewer is David Taylor. Anthropologist Marcus Hepburn is also present at the time of the interview. Well, the first thing I wanted to ask you was, when were you born?
I was born April 27, 1924.
And where was that?
Biloxi, Mississippi.
What kind of work did your dad do?
He was a shrimper, fisherman. He snapper fished and shrimp and oyster, all of it.
Was it a big family that you grew up in?
Well, there was six of us, three boys and three girls.
How did you get involved in fishing activities?
Well, that's all I knew, you know. When I was a boy coming up, I'd go with my father, you know, in the summertime. And that's all I ever did. I never knew nothing else.
Was it shrimping that he did?
Yes, it was shrimping and snapper fishing, too. He shrimped in the fall of the year and fished in the summer months.
How old were you when you first went out with him?
Oh, my God, I don't know. I was young. I imagine 7 or 8 years, so yeah. 6 years old.
Did
I was captain of a boat. I was 14 years old.
You, yeah, 14?
I was a captain, yeah. Wasn't much of a boat, but I was still the captain.
What kind of a boat was it?
It was a shrimp boat.
Yeah.
Hand rig, you know, the spool had winches and all that stuff. Pulled everything by hand.
Did you own the boat yourself?
I belonged to my father.
Oh, yeah. Your brothers fished too?
Yeah. For a long time, well, one of them is still fishing. The other one, he's got a job now working on the beach. And one boy died in infancy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, how long have you lived over here to Appalach?
My mom and daddy brought me here when I was 9 months old.
Mm-hmm.
I've been right here ever since then, except the 4 years I put in the Navy during World War II.
Mm-hmm. So did you pretty well stick to shrimping when you're fishing, or did you get into other types of fishing too?
Well, I've shrimped, pogie fished, which I never liked. I caught clams too. I really caught the fire of them things. We used to catch them Sunray Venus clams.
Hmm.
And I really caught them. I believe I caught it more than anybody's ever caught. I caught 847 bushel one day.
Yeah.
And I had it on a boat that was about 50 foot and it loaded down level with the water.
What kind of gear did you use to get clams?
We used a rig we got from up there in Baltimore, I believe. It was a hydraulic dredge, you know, had a gasoline pump, 6-inch pump, and this dredge had a trailer that held about 20 bushel. We'd pick it up every about 3 or 4 minutes. And that water pressure would blow the clams out the sand, you know, in front of the dredge, blow them back in the dredge.
Mm-hmm.
It was altogether different from an oyster dredge, you know. It didn't have any teeth. It had a flat bar on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like where they were digging a foundation for a block building or something, where you mm-hmm. dredge, it just cut just a perfect square ditch,
huh.
4 foot wide. It was a 4 foot dredge.
Well, who was buying clams at that time? Right?
Kirby.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Quality Seafood.
Right.
That's who I was working for.
Yeah.
Huh. They went out of it and sold it out to another man, and he just quit messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work to it, you know, getting them shucked, but there were plenty of them.
You ever do any oystering in the past?
Yes, sir. I've done some of that, too. The oyster business is about over with here, though, I believe.
Hmm.
That hurricane just about finished it off.
Yeah, that's what people have been telling us. Yeah.
Sure got bad.
What was the shrimping gear and boats like when you were starting in?
Well, we didn't have had 10 horsepower engine. Hmm. I remember that, called 10 horse clay engines. My daddy had a 16 horsepower Lathrop. Minions built in Bridgeport, Connecticut, I believe. And they're heavy duty, you know, and turned a big wheel. You could pull a pretty good size net. Pull about a 40-foot net and a set of 5-foot doors with it. You know, rope, no cable. You pull it by hand.
Mm-hmm.
But there was plenty of shrimp in them days. You could coat them with a corn sack.
Hmm.
I believe they go shrimp like that. That's when the Acme Packing Company was running it. It was down there about where the Standard Oil Company is now. It was all a big shrimp cannery there and an ice house.
Hmm. Was the deck gear like what they have now? Winches and
no, we didn't have any winches.
Like
no winches. Everything's by hand. Hmm. We didn't even have any lights. We used kerosene lanterns. And nobody trawled at night anyhow. Everybody, you know, stopped, quit. I remember when I was a boy, they'd all go in the Indian Pass and tie up the bank and play baseball if they couldn't catch enough shrimp. Of course, they wouldn't get nothing but shrimp them days, 3 cents a pound.
Yeah.
But they was all big shrimp, and they put them in these glass jars, you know, and shipped them out by rail. Mm-hmm. And they'd ship out boxcars, put them at the time.
Did they cook them first?
Yes, they cooked them. Steamed them, you know, just like they're crab. Mm-hmm. Peeled them. You know, put them in those jars. Hmm. That was back during Depression.
What were the boats like that you used?
Well, some of the old boats are still around, just a few. The old boat that my daddy used to own, that it was the Willis Sea, and I think they named the name of it. It's over in Caribbean now, to the Miss Heather. That boat's about, I imagine it's 65 years old. Mm-hmm. It's still going. That's about the only one I know of.
Mm-hmm.
It's left amongst that old bunch.
Mm-hmm.
They've been rebuilt, you know, several times. They pull them out and replace the ribs and the planks. Usually most of them nothing but the model F. In those days, that's good lumber anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You get real good lumber, you don't see it anymore.
Mm-hmm. What was the town like when you were a boy?
Oh, it was real busy here in those days. Let's see, there was two shrimp canneries here then. One was the Alligator brand, which was Paul Plugger. The other was Acme Packing Company. And then up the river a little ways, there was a meat packing plant that employed some people. And right across the street from it was an outfit that ground up shell, put it in chicken feed. It was a pretty good sized meal. It was right there by the Gulf Oil plant.
Mm-hmm.
I remember them distinctly. But, you could go down there. I was telling him the other day, you could walk down on the dock, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Them whistles would be blowing. We'd be going shrimping, you know, before daylight. Streets be full of people going to work.
Jeez.
Getting ready to go peel shrimp, shuck oysters. And they also canned oysters down there on the dock, too.
Oh, yeah.
They had these big, I don't know if you ever seen them or not. They called them dollies. It's a thing about 25 foot long. Get down, boy. About 25 foot long and about 4 foot wide and about 4 foot deep. It was just like a cage. And they put all these oysters in it, just filled it full of oysters.
Yeah.
Run into that steam tank and it cooked them. And they'd be all opened up and then the women took them out the shells and they canned them.
What was the name of that cannery?
That was the Alligator brand.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Plugger.
Mm-hmm.
He left here and went to Darien, Georgia, and opened up a cannery.
Hmm. Were there many Italian and Greek fishermen?
Oh, yeah. Just about all was back then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, down in that area that they call Irishtown, around the foot of the bridge,
mm-hmm.
they call that Irishtown. There wasn't no Irishmen down there, I knew it. All Italians and Greek people.
Mm-hmm.
The Italian people all went to Galveston, you know, right after World War II. Things got bad here, they all left. Some went to San Pedro to go sardine fishing, and some went to Galveston to go shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
But the Greek people all mostly went back to Tarpon Springs,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and back to sponge fishery, which they was in to start with.
Yeah.
At one time, we had a big sponge fishery here, you know. But that all died out. It was too far away from the sponge, really, you know. You didn't start catching the sponge, you get down off of St. Mark. That's quite a way.
Hmm. Hmm. Well, when did you stop fishing and get into making gear?
Oh, I was about 61. I'm 62 now. I've been off about a year.
Mm-hmm.
I sold my boat. A lot of people don't realize it's a lot of work keeping up a boat, you know. You have to work on it when you go fish for 10 days and 10 nights, then you come in, you got to work on that thing for you. I just got too old to keep it up.
Yeah.
Boat was 30 years old. It's a fine boat, but you can work it and it'll ride out from under you while you're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I sold it to a man over in Caravelle. Oh,
yeah. What kind of fishing were you doing at the end?
Shrimping.
Yeah.
Yeah, shrimp. Yeah.
Well, how'd you learn about making and repairing nets?
Well, back in those days, we had cotton nets, you know. And you had to learn it, or you couldn't keep a job, you know. Nobody would hire you if you couldn't patch net. And a lot of fellers that, there's some people today that don't know. They're big captains, but they can't build a net. They can't fix a trap to bring it to the net shop. But back when I started, you either done it, you didn't have no job, because there was always three or four people after your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just waiting for something to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, who showed you how to build nets?
I guess I just picked it up on my own. Yeah. Well, my father done it, and he taught me what he knew, and went on from there.
Mm-hmm.
How did they preserve the cotton nets?
Cotton, back in those days, they used what they call steam tar. It was crisp soap and pitch together, and boy, a light-complected person like you would eat him up. Take all the skin from under his eyes and around your mouth, it burned you up. So they come out with this nylon, then they went to this plastic net dip, mm-hmm. this synthetic dip.
Mm-hmm.
It's a plastic. It won't burn you. It won't hurt you. But that steam tar is like being around an old creosote pile in their telephone pole. It'll eat you up.
Yeah. Well, how did you go about doing that? What kind of container did you use?
They first started, they used, they done it cold. You know, they just mixed it all up in a big tank and just threw the net in it. And then they come out with this wrinkle of getting it hot. It'd run into the web and, you know, through this boiling tar, it'd be hot.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be careful with that stuff. It would burn up. So you had to use coarse salt. All them nets had to be salted down until they was cured. Once it was cured, it was all right. But when it was raw like that, you had to salt it. Pogey seines, them days, they had half the seine in each purse boat. They'd pour sacks of salt in the bottom of the boat and mix it up with water and bale water on that net, and the salt would go down through it to keep it from burning up.
Hmm.
They'd have no way to dry it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I suppose they went to nylon with all that changed. It's improved down through the years. That's a fact. The Japanese is in the webbing business and everything else is 20 years ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Were there net shops here in Appalachia in years past?
Yeah, there used to be.
Yeah?
Yeah, there was a fella had one down here. Well, his legs got too bad, he had to get out of it. He had one down there on the dock for several years. There's one at East Point, too.
Buford Golden?
Yeah.
What was the name of the man who was here?
James Copeland.
Copeland?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Go on, Tabby Joe. Ain't nobody wants to bother with you.
You got quite a zoo around.
Yeah. My little granddaughter got that cat.
He's nice looking kitty cat.
Go on, baby boy.
What kind of equipment do you need to make your nets?
Well, all you need is a knife and needles in the way of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you got to have. And a Marlin's bike. Whetstone to keep the knife sharp. You wear out a knife and nothing flat.
Okay, here's your knife over here.
You see how the blade of that knife's been honed down?
Yeah.
But I use there's a man at East Point that makes oyster knives.
Mr. Kane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got one of his net knives over there. It's a real good knife. It'll keep the edge pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But the sand in them nets, you know, sitting on it, working on a used net, you know, the sand in it, and it turned the edge of a knife quick. Right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't you have that down there at the dock?
Yeah, you seen it. Wooden handle knife?
Yeah. It's got a little short blade on it.
It's right over sticking that post right there.
That.
Go get it, pull it out that post. See it right there?
Yeah, well,
I stick it up in the post where I can bind it.
Yeah, I didn't know Mr. Kane made net knives.
Yeah.
So get him to make one for me. Oh, yeah, that's nice.
See, but webbing knife, you don't need a very long bladed knife anyway.
Yep. Feels nice and light in the hand.
It fits your hand real good. You take it like this, see, and you cut. All that webbing's tapered, see. You don't just cut straight. You have to have a knife that you get in the mashes, you know, kind of keen.
Mm-hmm.
If you cut in a taper, you know, you got a big wide-bladed knife, you got a little mash webbing, you got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But they used to use a 2 1/4-inch mash, and now about the biggest thing you ever see is 1 3/4, mm-hmm. and down to 1 1/2.
Where do you get your webbing?
I get it from different places. Biloxi Knit and Twine Company, and I buy a lot from Jimmy Cardin over in Panama City.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a knit shop.
Yeah.
Me and him used to fish together before he retired.
Oh, I've met Jimmy.
Yeah, he's a fine fella.
Yeah.
His brother's the one who invented that three-wing knit I was telling you about.
Hmm.
Skipper Cardin.
Mm-hmm.
He's tuna fishing now.
Hmm.
Out there in the Gulf, long lining for tuna. But it all changes. All your good webbing now, I've seen all of it. We're American-made webbing, but Taiwan's putting out the best webbing today.
Hmm.
Better webbing. Knots are tighter, more square.
Mm-hmm.
Don't slip.
Who do you do work for? Just people in Appalachia?
Individual people.
Mm-hmm. How far away would a fisherman come
a lot of work from Panama City, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of work out of Wakulla County. Different, you know, people that know me.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other net menders or makers here in Appalachia?
Oh, there's lots of amateur, you know, they're not professional net people. They can, a boy working here for me, he can patch, you know, things like that. But when it comes to making net, they can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's complicated, you know. A lot of figuring goes into a net. People don't realize how much it is, you know. You got to have so many mashes in the top, and your count's got to be right. If you've got more webbing in the bottom than you got in the top, you got a mess.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you were going to teach someone, say Marcus or I came by and we were real serious about,
yeah.
or someone in this community serious about learning,
yeah.
how would you go about teaching them the right way to make a net?
Well, the way I do is I'd cut the net out and start him sewing it up. That's how I learned.
Mm-hmm.
I had somebody cut it first to show me. Then it'll come to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to learn, it'll come to you. It gradually, but it'll come. I'm the oldest man in this part of the country that Portuguese type sewing. Golden can't do it, and nobody in this part of the country does that. That's the style of sewing that they've done on the East Coast, you know. They have to cut out, you know, a bunch of webbing out. I don't do that. I just trim off the edges of the knots, and I jump back and forth. I can sew across the net by the time they cut one out.
Hmm. Is that something, a style you'd only use in repair, or would that be
just
new
repair,
nets?
Yeah, you wouldn't do it in building new nets.
Hmm.
But we done that when you had cotton nets, you know. We used to leave Tampa going to Campeche. You'd have 5 or 6 nets,
mm-hmm.
300 or 400 pounds of webbing, a couple hundred pounds of twine. We got back, we didn't have nothing. We had cotton nets, you know. Mm-hmm. Loggerheads over there bad. You lose a lot of nets, tear up a lot of nets.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we learned. You had to do it fast, you know. The boats were single rigged in them days, but you need to try to keep one net ahead all the time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we'd have to work pretty hard to keep a net ahead. We'd tear up so many.
Mm-hmm.
The best shrimps around the edge of them rocks, and we didn't have the scientific equipment they got today, lower ends and plotters and all that stuff to keep you off that stuff. We had to guess where it was at.
Yeah.
Sometimes you guessed wrong.
Well, what were the size and shapes of nets that you used at that time?
Back there?
We were starting.
We used flat nets. That's the only net been invented. The man on the East Coast, first man started shrimping over there.
Where from? Jacksonville? Or
Mayport, in that area there. I think it was the Visagas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They had the first, they first one started shrimping over there.
And
up till then, we used seines around here to catch shrimp with, until they went over there and brought them nets over here.
Hmm.
We used leads on the bottom line them days instead of chain. Now we use chain
mm-hmm.
for weight.
Were the doors similar to what they used today?
Similar, but smaller, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing. Well, they come out now, they got aluminum doors, you know. They don't use wood, they're made out of aluminum.
Hmm.
The shoes, the steel shoes, are just bolted on the door. A lot of boys out in Alabama, Mississippi, has gone to that kind of door.
Are they're not as heavy as these big ones?
Well, I don't believe they are, because them old wooden doors soak up all that water. They get pretty darn heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Take them big boats, pulling two sets of 10-foot 40s with 5/8 iron, you know, and 6-inch shoes on the bottom. Pretty heavy. It soaks up all that water.
Mm-hmm.
But they just get bigger and bigger all the time and pulling more webbing.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, they ain't got the shrimp that they used to have, but I've often thought about it. They didn't have the boats in the old days they got today either.
That's right, yep.
Yeah. Pulling all that gear, some of them pulling 4 55-foot nets. That covers over 200 foot behind the boat. That's a wide path. Scoops up everything in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Half inch tickler chains. Where the bottom used to be bad, where that stump car was bad,
mm-hmm.
they just knocked that stump car down with them big chains and go on.
Mm-hmm.
They keep widening the bottom out. They find a little place in the old days probably. Yeah, just big enough to turn around on, they keep widening it out, knocking that coral down. Finally, they got a big place to drag.
Hmm. What are the names to the parts of the nets that you make?
The parts. Well, flat nets got a top and a bottom and 4 corner pieces and 2 wings
mm-hmm.
and a bag on the end of it. A 2 seam net now, or cutout net, is made out of 1 solid piece of webbing.
Hmm.
And you cut the corners in it. Which is a lot different from this. They're all different.
What were the chains you were talking about and other types of ropes? What are they called? Like the tickler chain that goes where?
Yeah, that tickler chain runs ahead of that bottom line on that net.
Mm-hmm.
3 to 4 or 5 foot ahead of it. Scares the shrimp up off the bottom. They raise up and then the net gets them. So they're jumping, you know, away from that chain.
Do people always have tickler chains, or do they have other types of chains?
Yeah, they all use ticklers,
yeah.
Regardless of what to drag. First man to ever use chain, I worked in Texas for several years, was an old boy on a boat named Rio Bravo.
Hmm.
The crab was bad, blue crab.
Yeah.
You couldn't drag for
yeah.
blue crab. You know, they eat your shrimp up, and you go to the freezer with them shrimp, and they throw them cut-up shrimp out on you, using lids. He just got a chain and tied it to the bottom line, what they call Texas-style chain with a braille.
Mm-hmm.
And he started using that. They called it Texas-style chain. But before that, on the East Coast, they'd quit using lead and went to loop chain. They'd just loop a chain, you know, and loops all the way across the bottom of the net for weight to hold the bottom line down. But over on the East Coast, they got a different bottom. What we got's got hard, sandy bottom. We got soft mud here. And we have to fish a lot lighter than they do, I think.
What's a Texas-style chain?
That's that braille chain. It'll, like this is the bottom line right here,
uh-huh.
That cable. They take a short piece of chain, about every 3 foot.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And they hang it down there like this here. Then they take these S links. And they put that chain right there like this. Hangs down on them braids. And what it does, the net's up off the bottom and that chain's just hitting.
Mm-hmm.
The crabs will go all in between there. That's what that was invented for.
Oh, yeah.
They'll go under it. And your fish is real clean, but very temperamental. You've got to rerun it every day and check it. If it stretches just 1 inch, well, it quit working.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep it just right.
Hmm.
A lot of them went to the case hardened chain, you know. Steel chain that
mm-hmm.
wouldn't stretch.
Hmm.
They used that. Stop it from a regular chain, you know, or stretch.
Hmm.
If each one of them links just wears just a little bit, and about a 60-foot net, well, you got a lot of slack then.
Yeah. What you were showing us in your notebook there, some of the shapes of your nets, what are the names of the different styles that you make?
I make all kinds, whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got flat nets, and you got what they call a 4-seam balloon net, which was designed to fish high up in the water. And you got cutout nets. It's cut out of 2 pieces of webbing. Then you got what they call T-seam nets. They don't have a wing, you know, but it's got a corner piece. And there's all different kinds. Some of them is taken in the, took part of a flat net and part of a balloon net and put them together and use the net like that. And that's what they do in Biloxi.
Hmm.
What about those zippers you were talking to Vernon the other day
about? Oh, the Japanese has been using them for years in their nets, but taking opening up the net and getting what they want out. And I was telling him that you could buy them. He'd put them in his nets. He could take the crab pots out, discard the crab pots.
Yeah.
When the crabbers get through crabbing, they usually just cut the floats off the pots through the rest of the board.
Yeah.
But I've never seen many old pots on the beach. Well, you get them in your net, and you got a mess, especially when they're rusted out, you know. They stick all in the sheet of the net, and they won't go down in the bag. And they hold the mesh of the net open, and they let the shrimp out. So I suggested to him of putting them zippers in the chute.
Mm-hmm.
He could unzip it and just reach in and pull them out, throw them on the boat, zip the net back up. It's plastic, it won't rust.
That's the first time I've ever heard of anything like zippers on it.
Have you seen it, or have you ever put one in a...
I've never put one in a net, but I've thought about it lots of times. I've read about, you know, I take the National Fisherman and that, all that mess, and I read up pretty well, and I was reading about it. And I don't see why it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I knew it would work. Mm-hmm. Especially with boats that are four-rigged, you know.
Yeah.
They got a mess, you know, four nets hanging out in them all full of crab pots.
Tell you.
And the state will fine you $500 if they catch you with a crab pot on the boat.
Hmm.
So if you catch any good ones, you got to get rid of them quick, put them back overboard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they call it molesting the crab pot.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't go down in the net, you know, they'll tangle up in the net. But them old ones that they throw away, them big boats, you know, they use what they call, some of them use rings, load rings, some use load blocks. And they got that thing rigged up where they can reach out, they got a line already out on the outrigger, you know, and they put it to the winch and they pull them set of doors and sled to the boat, and the net's hanging up there in the air with all them pots in it.
Mm-hmm.
If they can reach down there and unzip the chute of that net and pull them pots out, throw them astern the boat, they can be back in business.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little while. If you don't, you have to split the net open. Take your knife and split it and reach in there and pull them out and sew the net back up, you know, which takes a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to turn this over now. Now we're rolling.
Costy, the other day you were telling Vernon about how I guess you were over in Texas or somewhere, and you went up to a man to get a job, and he...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I went out right after I got out of the Navy, and I wasn't much going on here then. So I got a job in a net shop. I went to the net shop. It was a seine loft, you know, pogey boat seines, mending their seines. And I got a job in Port Arthur, Texas. And I wasn't making much money, I think about $40 a week. That wasn't very much, but that was boards, you know, $40 a week, which is pretty good, you know, right after the war. I decided I wanted to go shrimping. I went over to Galveston, and there was a boat icing up, and old man Chris Nelson. And I walked over and asked him for a job. He said, "Can you patch?" I said, "Yes, sir." He wouldn't take my word for it. He made me patch a hole in the net. When I patched the net, he told me, "Go get your clothes." I stayed with him about 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was originally from over at Mayport. Mm-hmm. Just about all them shrimpers in Texas was from the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. When a fisherman comes to you and says he wants a new net, how do you figure out what he wants for
shape? I let him tell me, and I put it in that book.
Yeah.
But a lot of them don't know what they want, you know, to be frank with you. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised at some of the fantastic designs they give you. If I don't think it'll work, I won't build it.
Mm-hmm.
If I think it'll work, I'll go ahead and build it. If I don't, I'll send him somebody else. So you build something like that, it hangs with you. You don't get rid of it, you know. So thing won't work, so so-and-so built that net, and you don't want one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't do that. I usually get him to tell me exactly what he wants, and I put it in that book. And then sometimes, the other day, well, several months ago, an old boy bought a couple of nets up here. Wanted me to rehang one line. I don't like to do that because usually the top line stretched. So I rehung it. It didn't have enough slack in it. Which really wasn't my fault. If I had rehung the top line, it would have been right. So I had to redo it all over again. Of course, I didn't charge him anything for it because I figured it was my mistake as well as his. Mm-hmm. I don't like to do that. I like to, it's like overhauling an engine. If you can't work on the crankshaft, you ought not be able to guarantee it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does a fisherman have to, what's the basic information he has to tell you to let you know what?
Well,
what to
if do? He brings a net up here and it's tore in two.
Yeah.
He wants it put back together. Tell me to put it back together, rehang it or dip it or whatever it needs. Go ahead and do it. That's what most of them do. They'll bring a net up here. They know that I know what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Some of them are as close, you know, with their money. They'll say, well, do this. This line needs changing. It's bad. I'll use it for another month or two. Mm-hmm. The one fellow I worked on, the net, net's about 9 years old. You know, nylon sun gets nylon after a while. I had to replace a bunch of webbing in it. But he should have bought another net after two or three seasons. You know, he'd be money ahead because when you invest money in gear, you're not throwing money away, I don't believe. Some of your best fishermen in this town have spent a lot of money on tackle. Mm-hmm. They got plenty of nets and good nets. They keep them up. You take the people that take some nets and they let them go and don't dip them. They keep dragging them. Well, the water pressure breaks down the filament, the nylon, and the twine goes to breaking. Then they say the webbing ain't no good. Mm-hmm. But that's not true. It's the way you take care of it. Mm-hmm. But you got some that don't take care of the tackle, and you got some that really, you know, and them that really keeps the tackle up is the one that catches shrimp.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you have to do to keep up your nets?
You have to keep them mended up, all the holes mended up. They should be hung, you know, periodically. And most good fishermen's got a couple of three sets of nets, you know, and they'll use one set, say, 3 months, 2 months. And they'll take that set off, send them to the shop, and get them rehung and mended up and dipped, and put the other set on, and then just rotate it like that. Mm-hmm. Those are fellas that do the producing. Because you can take a soft net, it won't fish like a net, fresh dip net, you know. It, mm-hmm. You dip them, it peps them up. I don't know, I think it's the water pressure. Mm. Something to do with it.
So the new net, after they're just dipped, they catch better?
Yeah, they do. It perks them up, I call it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's been a many a net through the wave on a bad set of doors, too. Mm-hmm. You get a crooked set of doors, you just wasting your time. Ain't no kind of net to work on. Mm-hmm. If it's got a crook in it, you know, up here on the hill, on the land, when it's in the water and the water pressure on it and the boat pulling on it, you know how much it's going to have.
Hmm.
About twice as much. It won't work. Mm-hmm. Won't spread. One side will spread, the other won't. Mm-hmm. You got one bad door and one good door.
Hmm. With new nets, when a fisherman comes, what do you need to know from him to be able
what
to go?
What size
through?
It is.
Yeah.
They're funny now. They're funny. If you, one of them tells you he wants a 35-foot net, he wants 35-foot. If it's 34-foot and 6 inches, he'd raise hell about it. If it's 35-foot and 6 inches, he won't say a word. That's funny. That's what they do.
They'll do that. That's all you need to know from him, what size?
What size, what type, how much slack he wants in the bottom line. The different features, like how deep he wants the wing. Some of the fellas use a deep wing, some use shallow. They don't all use the same kind of tackle. One's got one idea, one's got another.
What are the basic steps to building a net?
Well, first, you use a good grade of webbing. You try to, you know, get the best webbing you can get. And I never did cut corners. A lot of net makers are cut corners. They'll, instead of putting the webbing in the net, they'll cut it on more of a taper. I can't explain it. I'll draw it out
sure.
here for you. A net with a lot of taper shaped like this.
Kind of V-shape?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A net with not much taper is shaped more like this. Mm-hmm. This net here don't work good.
The V-shaped?
No, because it's got too much taper. And when you're pulling it, it builds up a back pressure in the middle of the net.
Mm-hmm.
And the shrimp run from it. But you can build that net cheaper than you can that one. A lot of them do that, but I don't do that. If I can't build it, you know, the way I want it,
mm-hmm.
the way I think it ought to be built, I don't care about building it. That too much taper like that, and when he builds that net, he saves a lot of money on the material. But it's costing the shrimper, the way I see it.
Yeah.
If I used to shrimp for a living, I know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and I know what nets will work and what won't.
Mm-hmm.
A net with a lot of taper like that just won't work. There's nothing you can do about it. You can do anything you want to it, and you can't get it to work if it's got all that taper in it.
Mm-hmm.
It just forms a back pressure in the middle of the net, and I think the shrimp run from it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always use her. Well, say if I was building up to a 35-foot net, I'd use a 2-in-1 taper. If I build over that, I use a 4-in-1. And if I build like a 70-foot net, the first panel I put in will be 4-1, next time panel will be 6-1. But never a 8-1 like them, some of them fellas use.
Hmm.
It cuts a lot of webbing out the net, which is cheaper, but it's not cheaper for that man that bought it.
Mm-hmm.
It cost him money.
After you get all your materials together, what's the first thing you do to put everything?
I start cutting the net out, the pieces out,
mm-hmm.
you know. I cut the top and the bottom. Like I was going to build a 35-foot net, I'd put about 350 meshes in the top. I'd cut that out. And you have to put a seam down the center of the top to save webbing because, you know, when you cut off the bale, you cut one half of the top out, so it'd be like this. Like this is the bale running here, see? This is the
big
webbing
rectangle.
This webbing is 200 meshes deep this way.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a bale will be 2,200 meshes long.
Hmm.
If you're going to build a 35-foot net, you can come over here and count one half of the top, which would be about 175 meshes. And you come over here and you cut the taper this way, see?
Mm-hmm.
Then you come back down here on the bottom. And you go the 350 meshes and you cut it this way, see, like this. Well, this piece and this piece turned over and sewed together makes the top, see.
Mm-hmm.
That way you don't have any waste. If you didn't, you'd have a taper on the bale.
Right.
You understand what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of people can build a net, but they waste a lot of material, too. Webbing costs about $4.50 a pound. You can't afford to waste none.
What do you do next after you've cut out your pieces?
I start sewing it together.
Mm-hmm.
I'll set the top, always set the top in first. If it's a flat net, then I'll set the bottom in, then I'll put the corners in. And then I have to double salvage it all the way around, see?
What does that mean?
Well, that where it's got, you know, with single twine, I have to double that twine where the hanging's going. Don't break it. A lot of them don't do that. They go ahead and hang in a single mash, and first thing it's broke, it's fell out of that hanging.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use a standard size mesh?
No. They all use different mesh. Big boats usually use an 1¾ number 15 webbing.
Mm-hmm.
15 twine, which this is 15 right here.
Mm-hmm.
That's number 15. Here's what a small boats would use, number 9.
Mm-hmm.
That's what little boats use, 9.
What size mesh for the smaller boats?
Usually anywhere from 1½ to 1⅝.
Mm-hmm.
That's their size. And big boats all use 1¾. Some of them use 2-inch webbing.
Mm-hmm. That's bar mesh?
Sir?
2 inches bar? Or?
No, it'd be 2 inches stretched.
Stretched.
Well, if you look over in that box, you'll find some different pieces of webbing in there. I'll drag you out a couple of pieces and I'll show you.
Now after you've got the...
Bring a piece of that green. That's what you the small boats use right there.
Yeah.
That's made by the Browning Net Company in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. That's what small boats use. That's 1.5 mast, number 9. And the big boat, you use 1.75, number 12. That's a piece of it laying right there. Well, here's a piece here. Uh-oh, I come unplugged.
Just take that off there. Go
ahead. Uh-oh.
That's all right. Oh, okay.
Now this is for the big, this is the big boats?
Yeah. That's that blue dip, blue plastic dip. I got that right.
Should be. Yeah, that'll sound fine.
Uh-oh.
There we go.
I got number beard.
This hasn't been dipped yet.
No. That webbing come from Connecticut. Yeah.
Brownell Net Company in Moodus, Connecticut. I've never heard of that town. Moodus. Number 9, 3,000 meshes, is that what that means? And 200 meshes deep, 1.5 stretch, and it weighs 100 pounds.
Now this, as I tell you about the webbing made in Taiwan.
Yeah, King Chu International. This word here, selvage, is that the word you were using a minute ago?
Yeah, salvage.
And that, what does that mean exactly?
Well, it means this right here. See this where it's right there? See, it's double right there. See,
oh, yeah.
Double?
It's like a reinforcement.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You have to have that hang to.
Mm-hmm. So this is where you'd put the...
hanging twine, right. Yes.
But you can get it without this? The webbing without this?
Yeah. Yeah. You can buy that webbing in 100 mast depths without salvage, which they use for extensions and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Take that with you if you want it.
Sure.
I got a bunch of whole box of scrap webbing over there. I save the pieces, you know, and new webbing. But sometimes you have to put a patch in. I got more than I'll ever leave. I even got a loft full up there.
You were explaining a minute ago, after you cut your webbing and then you've sewn it together, what happens after that when you get to that stage?
When you finish all the sewing, you hang it in, hang it on that line. All the small boats use polydact rope, and the big boats use combination cable, which is a cable with stainless steel in it. But a polydact rope is there's a piece laying over there behind you. See that rope laying right there?
This right here?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's what the small boats use, bay boats. They use polydact rope. They don't have a lot of power, you know, and they have to use, if they hang up something like that, somebody have to come get them because they wouldn't get it loose. Mm-hmm. So they use that.
Is this a little trawl right over there?
That's a little net I made for a friend of mine. I built those doors you see right there, too, behind you. They go on that little net right there.
Now, is that a tri-net here, or is that
No, that's just a little net that he used to catch fish bait with and catch shrimp to eat with, you know. It's not a commercial net. It's about 18 foot, I believe.
Do you make tri-nets as well?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Do you make any other kinds of nets besides shrimp nets?
Well, no. You're talking about gill nets and stuff like that.
Or cast nets or any other type of thing?
No, I can't make a cast net. I could make one all right. If I had the webbing, I could cut it out in 8 pieces and sew it together, but I ain't never tried to knit a cast net. I got a sister that makes a good one.
Oh, yeah. She live here in Appalachia?
Yes, sir.
What's her name?
Gloria Hausman. Mm-hmm. But she used to knit her own cast nets all the time. Huh.
How did she learn how to do that?
Oh, darn if I know. But she'll be, you know, the cast net's got a widening in it. Yeah. And she puts a bobby pin in that widening where she won't forget it when she comes around there to it.
Uh-huh.
But she knit cast net. I build them roller frame trawls, which is, they don't have any lines or nothing in them, you know. Nothing hung, you just lace the line in them. That's them over under that tree.
Behind you, Carl.
Yeah, that roller frame. Yeah. Use them in rock bottom.
Are those common around here to use those?
Down south they use them, yeah.
Yeah.
Not around here because you can't drag them in the mud. They got to be hard, sand, or rock. Use that flat rock. They use a lot of them down there around Newport Richey and mm-hmm. Crystal River,
mm-hmm.
Tarpon Springs, places like that.
Mm. Well, I've heard of those things before being used over on this coast.
They catch good shrimp with them things.
Mm.
They don't catch nothing but shrimp now there. They got them fingers on the bottom that keeps all the sponges out,
mm-hmm.
and it rolls along, and that roller's rolling. It rolls up over the rock. You float the net, just about up off the bottom.
Now, who makes all that rig?
Man in Tampa?
Yeah.
I can't think of his name. He used to be a shrimper, too. I know it as good as my own, but I can't remember it.
Hmm.
He makes those things, and he makes them long line reels, you know, for them long line
mm-hmm.
boats, and
mm-hmm.
got the level winder and all that stuff on it.
Hmm.
Pretty complicated. Hmm. All made out of aluminum, them reels are.
How do they attach the net to that frame?
It goes right at the bottom there, around that bar. Where the roller's at, you see that roller on the bottom? The net only fishes about that high.
Oh.
It fishes clean across that frame. It rolls along, and the shrimp is jumping through them bars you see in the bottom.
Yeah.
And they go back in the net. You don't never make no big drags or something like that, but they get a basket, 100 pound, to pick up every 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Night's time, they done caught some shrimp.
Yeah.
Jeez. I used them on that boat of mine before, so did I. I was using two 14 foots and an 18 foot across the stern.
Mm-hmm.
Worked good, too, but that's just so much controversy down there.
Mm-hmm.
So many stone crabbers. And the state leans towards the stone crabbers. And now that, before, you know, outside the state line, you wouldn't bother with nobody. The federal people didn't mess with you very seldom. They give you air to drag in. You better drag in that. If you didn't, it's a $5,000 fine if they caught you.
Hmm.
But when I was framing down there, the stone crabbers got mad, and they went out there and they strung out barbed wire with a concrete block on each end. You'd wrap that all up in them rollers, man, you talk about a mess. Rearing your hand, cuss and send your soul to hell in about 30 minutes. And, that went on. So now I think they've deputized the DNR agents, and they got jurisdiction in federal waters. So I don't know what's become of that.
Mm.
I've got a son-in-law down there framing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess he's getting by. I ain't heard from him.
Hmm.
But they give you an area to drag in. But, you know, the stone crabbers got a certain place to put them pots. And as the season changes, they move the pots out, you know. Hmm. Well, they got the pots in places where there ain't no crabs and rocks and everything else where you could drag very easily. But they just want all the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
In this controversy. And the shrimpers won't stick together, you know, like them people all stick together. I know they had a meeting in New Orleans about it, that Fisheries Commission. There's three or four busloads of stone crabbers, and I think one shrimper up there. So you know how that turned out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In addition to small doors like this, do you ever make large doors?
Yes, sir. Sometimes I do. So, I hadn't built any lately. I think last set I built a set of two sets of 9-foot doors. But door building's art, too. It's got to be right. The holes has got to be right. You got a formula, you know, you bore them doors by. And if they ain't right, they won't work.
What kind of formula? What would that consist of?
Well, if you have to have the same amount in between them chains that you do on each end together, You take the back and the front and add them together. You got to have the same distance in between the chain. Plus, you got 2 inches more on the back than you have on the front. And you got to sit down and figure that all out. And it's all got to be square, too. You know, one hole can't be a 16th of an inch behind the other. It got to be straight.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take a frame and square, you know, and square that thing off. Mm-hmm. It's all got to be bolted together on them big boats. In the old days, they just nailed and bolted together and went on. They have to be bolted and all that iron run up the back of them.
What kind of wood do you use in your doors?
Wood, pine usually.
Yeah.
Good grade of pine. Try to get pine that's not got a lot of knots.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be thick lumber, too. It can't be standard lumber. It has to be 5/4 lumber.
Mm.
You'll pull inches. If you don't, it'll bend, and you got problems then.
Mm-hmm.
They build them, and they put braces across the back to keep the water pressure from bending them. Put a 4x4 lengthways.
Mm-hmm.
Some use 2x4 to keep them from bending.
Mm-hmm.
That big engine pulling on that thing, and they bend them. They have a bend, well, that's it. They ain't no more good.
Yeah. What size metal do you use?
On the shoes, they use, most of them use 5/8 by 6. Some of them use 1/2 inch iron, but not many. Most of them big boats use 5/8 iron.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got the upright iron in the back, you know, to use angle up the back. And that's bolted through the door. That shoe's bolted on, and all the lumber is bolted to the slats in the back, you know, just like a door.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. It, you have to put, it'll take 200 boats to build a set of them doors.
Wow.
200 5/16 boats.
Hmm. How long does it take to build a set of doors?
It'd take a couple of 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
The doors has got high now. They got up, and now we're $1,200 for a set of 10-foot 40s.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, that's from that outfit in Alabama.
Mm-hmm. How do you figure the prices you charge for your nets, your new nets?
They're usually by the hour, work by the hour, so much an hour.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you know after you've built a net for a fellow if it's a good net or not?
I don't know. He'll have to try it, and then he'll tell me if it's bad.
Yeah.
But usually I'll build a fella a net like I built a net for, well, another fella built the net, and he brought the net up here to me. And I said, what's the matter with it, Ronnie? He said, it won't catch a damn thing. That's what's the matter with it. So I run off the bottom line and have a 5-foot of slack in the bottom line. So I cut the bottom back. I took some webbing out the bottom and rehung the bottom line and put 12-foot of slack in the bottom. The bottom line be 12 foot longer than the top line. I said, call me if it works, Ronnie. He called me the next morning and said, boy, she's blowing it out. But I try not to do no bad work. If I do something wrong, I redo it.
Yeah, yeah.
I want it right. I don't cut no corners. And sometimes they want to cut corners, I'm telling them now, I don't approve of that.
Mm-hmm.
You see it?
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Did this shed make it through the hurricane?
Yes, sir. It made it. I built it myself, too. It surprised me. But I had a back porch on my house there that took it off. And I had 3 big pines in the front yard. It got all them.
Hmm.
You see how it blew that tree over right there? It was straight up and down.
Wow.
Blew it over. It was blowing an 80 or 90 mile an hour steady wind. Hmm. I stayed home. I didn't leave.
Yeah.
So I went off in that first one. They wouldn't let me get back to town. I didn't want to leave anymore.
Yeah.
And I had a little shrimp boat back then, and I had it pulled out on the beach working on it. And the hurricane come and finished tearing it up. I had lost my oyster skiff in the first one. That water, you know, it got real high down there. You know where that railway's at there? A friend of mine had his truck parked there by that railway, and the water come up even with the window.
Jeez.
It was a lot of water. Of course, right out here, you know, it's high. The river's right back there, but we don't never get no water on this ridge back
here.
Yeah.
What's this part of town called, isn't it?
This is Highland Park.
Yeah.
We call it Highland Park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was one other fellow living out here when I built my house here. Now it's full of people.
Yeah.
All back in there.
Yeah.
All over here.
But there's a part of town called Irish Town?
Yeah, that's down around the bridge. Uh-huh. You know where they're building a new bridge?
Yeah.
It starts in, back then, we lived down there when I was a boy. Mm-hmm. You know, as you come off of the bridge, there's a, you know where Pendleton Service Station was at? That Union Station?
Oh, yeah.
Union?
Yeah.
Well, our house was right there where that filling station was at. Oh, yeah. That's where we lived at, right there. And we lived there for years. And then during the war, my dad bought a place out there by the gym. He wanted to get out of town. So my mother still lives there by the gymnasium. That old house she lived in, built in 1866, I believe. About a year after the Civil War was over.
I gotta stop this once again. I don't get. End of tape one of the November 11th, 1986 interview with retired fisherman and net maker Coster Bougier of Apalachicola, Florida. Interview continued on tape two.